close to the committee that everybody cares about.
Here we are. Okay, we're on. All right. The House Committee on Revenue will come to order. Good morning, committee members. Thank you so much for being here on time at this early hour. We're going to be meeting at this hour every day through the session, unless the very, very, very rare occasion that the committee is canceled for some reason. And I think since some of us are new to each other and also to the people who are in the room and on the internet, I think it would be helpful if we introduced ourselves, and we'll start on the right end.
Hi, Representative Sherry Springer from House District 17, and that's basically Lebanon, Sweet Home, Sublimity State, and clear up to Detroit, and I have lots of beautiful lakes and trees.
Thank you.
Representative Nick Call for House District 49, Fairview, Wood Village, Troutdale, North Gresham.
I'm Tobias Reed, State Representative for District 27, which is about half of Beaverton, a little bit of southwest Portland, some unincorporated Washington and Multnomah counties. Glad to be back for a second session on revenue.
Representative Cliff Benz, District 60, the largest district in the state of Oregon, almost no trees, 26,000 square miles, and we scraped together 57,000 people within that someplace. Glad to be here.
Thank you. It's great to have you. And you're larger than a couple of states, aren't you?
Your district? Larger than a lot of states.
A lot of states. Good morning. I'm Representative Phil Barnhart from House District 11, which includes pieces of Eugene, Brownsville, Coburg, Cresswell, the outskirts of Lebanon, Sweet Home, beautiful downtown Leeburg, and most of the area around the city of Springfield.
Representative Jules Bailey from Inner East Side Portland, House District 42, which are the Hawthorne-Belmont Division neighborhoods and parts of Woodstock and up towards the freeway.
Representative Vicki Berger from the Salem area.
Representative Scott Bruin from House District 37, which is West Lynn and Tualatin. Glad to be back, Mr. Chair.
It's great to have you back. Thank you. As others arrive, we'll ask them to do the same. Paul, do you want to start us on our agenda?
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, welcome members returning and new members. And we actually, I think I have a member that was on two sessions ago was back with us, Representative Riley. So we're glad to see you all back in town. It gets lonesome here when you're away. So we're glad to have you back. The first order of business is your committee rules for adoption. The committee rules you have in front of you are the standard rules that will be adopted by all the House committees. The only change we have from prior sessions is one that you're aware of through the House rules adoption, and that is number 16. On the treatment of minority reports, and there is a requirement that a minority report must have submitted as a proposed LC amendment and be distributed to the committee for possible consideration. There is an exception to that if a work session occurs within 24 hours after the first public hearing, or if you have a meeting that's a public hearing and a work session at the same time and the bill passes out, then a minority report could be issued without actually seeing the drafted amendment. So that's the only difference. One other thing, a comment that I'll make is that an issue that often comes up for us in terms of kind of procedure is a subcommittee versus a work group. Keep in mind that a work group is informal, is not a public meeting, therefore we can't have a quorum of committee members at that work group, but oftentimes the chair in the past has used work groups to try to discuss issues, and that's an informal, usually with LRO staff, whereas a subcommittee is a formal subcommittee of the Revenue Committee, and it would be a public meeting.
Right. Yes, ma'am. Yes, Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, in the interests of the minority on Rule 16, it supposes, and I guess I would like affirmation from you, that you will distribute any amendments that are received to the committee.
Um, there are amendments that are drafted that we look at that but decide not to bring for a variety of reasons. Sometimes they're technical. Well, many times they're technical reasons. But I would certainly promise that any amendment brought by a member who wanted it to be distributed would definitely be distributed.
What I'd like on the record, that if
right.
I bring an amendment or any other member brings
right.
an amendment, it will be distributed by the chair. That
right,
you will
if
not.
The member requests that it be distributed, if the intent of it is that it be distributed. I didn't want to say
absolutely.
In a blanket
understand the
way.
Technicality.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, but you understand what I'm asking.
Absolutely, and the purpose of this rule, as I understand it, is not to prevent a minority report, but rather to formalize the way in which the subject matter of a minority report is brought to the attention of the committee. I could easily imagine a situation in which a member brings an amendment that, with the thought that it might be a minority report, but this, have the committee discover that they like the idea and adopt it as part of the bill. That could easily happen. There have been situations in the past where minority reports have been brought, the matter's been referred back to committee, the minority report's been adopted as the committee report, referred back to the floor, and the measure passed that way. So this we hope this will short-circuit that process and make it more likely that the bill deliberation of the committee be all-inclusive of the different issues that members want to discuss on a particular bill. And that's the way to accomplish it, is to distribute the amendments. And that would absolutely be my intention.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate the question. I think it's a very important one. We are talking about a new procedure, something a little different than we've done before. We hope it improves the process, makes it easier for an existing majority of 31 in the House to get its will made in the House, maybe by action in the committee first. Now, thank you. Other discussion? We probably should have a motion at some point. Somebody wants to move the adoption of the rules. Representative Bailey?
I move that we adopt the rules.
Thank you. Representative Bailey moves that the rules be adopted as written. Any further discussion? Are there objections to the rules as written? Seeing no objection, the rules are adopted. Paul?
Okay, Mr. Chair, but before I get into a little bit of discussion of the draft work plan that our House Chair and our Senate Chair have reviewed and talked about and kind of divided up some major issues, I'll go through that. But first thing I wanted to do is point you to our hot off the press, Oregon Public Finance Basic Facts that we were previously printing out last night. So we try to get this done before each session.
It's cooled.
Yeah, it's cooled a bit. So, but I wanted to refer you just to the inside page just to show you your staff and your organizational chart for the for the committee. Legislative Revenue Office, we are now in room 143, so if you haven't come by, be sure to. It's right over by it's in the Secretary of State's wing of the building there. Our chairs are Representative Barnhart and, of course, Senator Burdick on the Senate side. I'm the Legislative Revenue Officer. My appointing authority is the committee chairs and the leadership. I'm actually the third Legislative Revenue Officer since the office has been in existence since 1975. So we've had Rich Munn was the original, then Jim Scherzinger, and then myself. And I actually have my 10th anniversary coming up in Legislative Revenue on February 1st. So,
yeah. Congratulations.
Seems like longer, Mr. Chair. we're organized by economists that work in our specialty areas. And we restructured a little bit where we used to have just four economist positions, but we've divided those up where we have two senior economists, Mazen Malik, who works on transportation, consumption taxes of various sorts, excise taxes, including OLCC, even though it's not actually a tax, a lottery, bonds, estate taxes. So Mazen deals with a lot of the the smaller tax issues that come up can often be pretty complicated. Steve Meyer does our school finance and our state school fund distribution. Steve has been with the office since 1975, since it was first created. So he's been here the entire time. Chris Allenack does our personal income, corporate income tax. He also works on our tax incidence model that we'll describe to you and probably have opportunity to use for proposals. Also, Dave Beck has come joined us from the Office of Economic Analysis, and Dave will be working on property tax. He'll also be doing the cigarette tax. Maz will do a lot of the other tobacco tax issues, but Dave will work on cigarette tax estimates, unemployment tax, and also a major issue this time, healthcare taxes, provider taxes, and we anticipate that to be an issue we'll spend a lot of time on. We have a new office manager since July, Corinne Gavette, and Corinne is here. And she is a good contact person for any questions you have about the committee. We also have June Starkey, who's joined us, and we share with LFO, helping us on our information system issues. Your committee assistant is Carol Phillips, and Carol will be with us on all your committee meetings, and Carol can help you with any material you need for the meeting. Anna Grimes behind her is was our task force coordinator, this interim for the Revenue Restructuring Task Force, and she is the Senate committee assistant. And then also Sam Moody is our receptionist at the front desk if you need to try to track us down somewhere. Sam usually knows where we are. So that's our group, and we're our role, of course, is to provide you with the best information we can and to give you good, objective, sound analysis and estimates.
Thank you. Maybe before we proceed, I'll let the last two arriving members introduce themselves. Other members introduce themselves before you got here.
Representative Sarah Gelser from Corvallis and Philomath.
And I'm Representative Chuck Riley from Hillsborough, Corneas, and Forest Grove.
And I simply wanted to greet the committee now that we're all here and simply say that this is a tremendous group of people. I expect to have lively discussion about the serious kinds of issues that we're going to be facing this session. I remember during the last interim meeting that a number of issues came up and I kept saying over and over again, we'll be dealing with that issue during the session. So now we're in session, we'll be dealing with that issue. And with that, perhaps Paul could introduce the work plan.
Chair, we've...
And, of course, it's called draft work plan because we're going to discuss it and talk about things we may want to add or change or potentially even delete.
Mm-hmm. And one thing, too, of course, Mr. Chair, not only the draft for that reason, but also because the situation we find ourselves in is very fluid, not only in terms of the economy, but also in terms of federal policy and what kind of changes we may see coming from Washington, D.C. that'll have a big impact on our revenue policy. We do think that, from the standpoint of what's happening in the economy and I always talk about these issues as a recovering forecaster, and I guess I'm glad I'm not forecasting these days. It's a very unusual situation in terms of the post-war economic conditions we've seen. We're basically appear to be in an economy where we're restructuring very quickly away from a period of consumption that was extremely high by historical standards. And that consumption is coming down very quickly, much, much quicker than anyone had anticipated. So that's creating a lot of adjustments in the economy. We are watching the tax returns come in very closely, and we've asked state economist to update the committee tomorrow kind of on what they see coming in so far. We had a deadline January 15 for estimated payments, quarterly payments. And that's kind of an early indicator of what the returns are going to look like. So what we're seeing is deteriorating conditions, and so we'll keep you abreast of that. And we do anticipate a formal revenue forecast on February 20th, which will be your traditional March forecast, and that'll give you some solid numbers to start to build on for the budget, not only for the 2009-11 period, but also 2007-2009 adjustments you may have to make. The summary of key issues I have listed below. The I wanted to point out a couple things first, though. The House Committee will be working real closely with the Senate Committee. The chairs will be having weekly meetings, and so you'll see that when you look at the work plan, there's a kind of a coordination between the two committees on the major issues that will come before you. So some things you may not see till a little later that are critical issues after the Senate has dealt with them. The other input that the committee will have is from the interim, the task force on comprehensive revenue restructuring. We have a report that's also kept our copy machine busy the last day, and that report is being finalized right now, and we will have the chair of the task force, Lane Shetterly, in to talk with the committee next week and kind of what their findings are and what that report says. We had several of our members on that committee, so on that task force. So we'll be looking at their recommendations. The summary of the key issues, the first one, budget rebalance measures. Anytime the state has gone into a major downturn, I'm referring here to the early 80s, the 79-83 period, two biennia, and of course the 2001-2003 period, revenue policy was a key factor in trying to rebalance the budget. Of course, we do not at the state level have the luxury of the federal government of being able to run deficits. Your responsibility by the Constitution is to balance the budget. And so when economic conditions deteriorate, you really have three choices, either reducing expenditures, increasing revenue, or going into reserves. So those kinds of options will be before you, and we'll talk about some of the revenue implications and try to develop what some alternatives might be for the committee to look at and discuss. The second major issue is corporate minimum tax reform. We have had this issue certainly out there amongst the public. I remember when we had the joint interim tax reform committee in 2004, we had a lot of public comments about the $10 corporate minimum. And so it's an issue the public is aware of, but it raises a whole series of issues about, well, if $10 is not the appropriate level, then what is? What is the appropriate base? How should the state look at a corporate minimum or alternative minimum? And it opens up the whole issue of business taxation in general. So the committee spends a good deal of time on that last session, looked at some other alternatives. We had some major proposals come from the governor. We have another one from the governor. We had proposals come from both caucuses last session. So it's an issue that's been around a while, but one we would anticipate spending some time discussing and looking at the alternatives. The third major area I have are the initiatives that have come from the governor, contained in the governor's budget. I've listed the main ones here, but there's a number of others as well. The major revenue issues are the medical provider tax. We have an existing provider tax that is no longer feasible to continue because of federal rules. So that essentially has to be replaced by October 1st. The governor has a proposal. There's a proposal that we'll see come to the health policy committee. They will look at that first, and we would anticipate subsequent referrals on something in the provider tax area.
Let me interrupt just for a second. That was first cut at that we saw in the bills introduced at first readings, House Bill 2009, yes. An easy number to remember.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And that, by the way, we do anticipate one of the roles that this committee plays is oftentimes, and I think we saw this more last session than even we had in the past, that policy committees will look at policies that have revenue implications, and they'll spend time on that. If they think it's something that they want to see happen and think it's a good idea, they'll approve it, and then it'll come over here on a subsequent referral. So we'll start, as we get toward the end of toward the deadline for considering bills in the same chamber, we're going to see a lot of those subsequent referrals come through. One thing I guess I should add now, and we'll talk more about it as it comes up, one of the things that that leadership wants the substantive committees to do, policy committees, is not to approve bills that have a revenue impact until they've actually seen that impact. In the past, what we've done is issue what's called a hall pass. So the committees would look at just the policy side of it. We would tell them, well, we think it has a revenue impact, but we'll get to it when it gets to the revenue committee. And now what leadership wants is for those committees to look at those revenue numbers. So we'll be providing preliminary numbers to those committees. And one of the things we have added to our revenue impact statements, and you'll see this when we'll go through it a little later, but we have at the bottom now of our revenue impact statements a box which says, does this measure expand, create, or extend a tax expenditure? And then you check either yes or no. If it's a yes, then what we want the revenue impact statement to say is the purpose for that tax expenditure and the expected outcome. So that'll be, I think, an area where the committee will spend a lot of time talking about the policy purposes and the revenue impact justify those expected outcomes.
And for, if I could, for members who were not here last time, all of the returning members know that we spent a lot of time trying to ascertain how revenue bills were intended to work and what purpose they were expected to serve, in the hopes that we could improve the tax expenditure report and also help guide future revenue committees and legislatures on as they consider whether to continue with a particular revenue policy or change it to something else. In that sense, we're trying to follow along with what the Ways and Means Committee has been doing now for a number of years as it considers the purpose of a budgetary expenditure. The insight, of course, is that whenever we do a tax expenditure, we're spending the state's money, and we should be planning for a way of measuring whether or not the purpose or the object of that tax expenditure in favor of some public policy is actually being achieved, and whether that public policy is one we actually want to continue. So that's a major change from the way the revenue process has worked in the past, and it's kind of slow going to get it operational. But the Legislative Revenue Office has done a great job, I think, in starting that process to getting this codified in a way that will get everyone in the habit of thinking about these expenditures as in effect budgetary expenditures, even though we treat them in a different way. Thank you, Paul. Go ahead.
So to turn back to the work plan and the governor's revenue initiatives, the governor does have a proposed cigarette tax increase, something, of course, we had last session and had a significant increase in 2002. So we'll talk about the revenue side of that. There's a number of implications to that. And then we would also anticipate coming from the Transportation Committee some of the funding aspects of a major transportation package, and that, of course, raises a series of issues around revenue generation, but also around the state's commitment to cost responsibility. So we look at that. We have a cost allocation study. Mazin is here, and Mazin was just at a meeting on that this week. So that cost allocation study will be coming to you probably in a couple of weeks, that shows the distribution of costs among light and heavy vehicles and actually among detailed weight categories. And so any funding proposal has to meet the state's goal of cost responsibility.
And that's a constitutional requirement, isn't it?
Yes. It was referred by the legislature in 1999 and approved by voters in 2000. Yes. So, of course, there's a lot of policy aspects to those major proposals, and the Revenue Committee, though, has the revenue expertise to look at those the revenue components to ensure they're properly designed. The next issue I have is a big one for us. We don't know what will ultimately be in federal tax changes. You know, sometimes this can be a routine issue, and other times it's been a huge issue for the committee. This time we think it's going to be a major issue because of the changes we're expecting. Just to give you a little bit of background, we have gone back and forth historically between what we call a rolling reconnect and then a disconnect in which you actually have to take a positive action to connect to federal changes. We are now in a rolling reconnect is the current policy, and what that means is that any changes in the federal tax base we connect to automatically unless you decide otherwise. So you have to take action to disconnect from those changes to the federal tax base. It's also important to keep in mind the difference. Different federal tax changes have very different implications for us. If it's a tax credit, for example, there's discussion about increasing the child per child tax credit. Well, that's not a connect issue because it's not a tax base issue. And we actually gain revenue from that change because people would have less federal taxes to subtract off their state return, and therefore we're going to pick up, in most cases, 9% of that because we'll have more a bigger state tax base. If, on the other hand, it's something that affects the base, and we've seen this in terms of federal depreciation policy in recent years, then the state will lose revenue from that connection. We saw that last February again, as you recall, those of you in the February session. So that's what we're watching for. We have, there are other nuances, like we see proposals, not detailed yet, to increase the earned income credit. Well, the earned income credit affects us because we're at a certain percentage of the federal credit. So if the federal credit gets bigger, then that would affect our revenue through our percentage connection. So there's a whole series of things, and Chris Allenack is tracking that very closely, and we'll keep you up to date on that. And we do have a standard bill on reconnect from Department of Revenue, and that'll be our vehicle to look at all those connect issues. The next set of issues I have there, I've kind of lumped them together as revenue policy process, administration, and compliance. We would anticipate a series of things coming to you from the Senate in that area as well. We talked about the tax expenditures. The committee introduced during the interim committee a sunset proposal to systematically sunset the tax credits, and to give the committee a regular schedule to review them. And that would be a significant policy change. We do also have a compliance report coming from Department of Revenue. That was the Revenue Department was directed. Actually, a bill that came out of Senate Revenue in February, and came through House Revenue Committee, which directs Department of Revenue to do a study of compliance. To what extent can we tell how much compliance we have with current law? IRS has been doing this kind of estimates for the federal income tax, and so they'll have some information for you. We have the director, Elizabeth Harchenko, scheduled to be here on January 30th, I believe, to talk to the committee. One thing I should add, we're talking about the Department of Revenue. Two familiar faces are in the back that will work closely with you. Deborah Buchanan from the department has been working with the legislature, and John Phillips handles property tax issues. Deborah does income tax stuff, and the two of them have been working, gosh, how many sessions? Too many. So, and they're almost, even though they're executive branch employees, they're almost an extension of our staff, and they work very closely with us for years.
And they're very important resources for us. Thank you.
Yes, I would add, too, that, you know, that nearly all of the data we analyze, unless it's something from local governments, comes from the Department of Revenue. I mean, they have a wealth of information because we have a huge amount of information from the tax returns and from property taxes we get from the county. So that's our major data source when we look at proposals. The last major issue I have there for the House initially is energy and environmental tax policy. The committee spent a lot of time working with the Energy and Environment Committee last session in developing some proposals that involved tax credits for biofuels, a significant expansion of the so-called BETCI, the Business Energy Tax Credit. That has now become our largest tax credit in terms of dollar impacts outside of the personal exemption credit. So that's a major policy. There's a lot of interest, I know the chair has, and chairs of actually both committees, of kind of reviewing what we've seen happen in that credit, how it's been used, what kind of issues has Department of Energy encountered. We've also represented a major expansion of our use as a state of the transferability of credits, as the Business Energy Tax Credit can be certified and used by a company that carries out an eligible investment, then they can turn around and transfer that credit, in other words, sell that credit, so that someone who is interested in a tax credit because of their liability will actually end up purchasing that credit. So that whole process is something, and we've been working with Department of Revenue on that too, to make sure that that's a clean process, that we can track where those credits end up going, and that we have certain parameters around that behavior, and we have consistent policies. So those are the major issues on the House side, and then on the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee, and I think everybody's aware, but those that are not, we are also staffed at the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee. So I think that that's one of the things that helps us while we're not a joint committee as a Ways and Means. We have the same staff of the two committees. So when a bill comes over, we've, of course, been working on it for a long time, and we can fill you in on any questions you have on what kinds of discussion or issues came up on the Senate side. Issues that have been flagged, and actually I'm giving you a little bit of a preview of what their work plan discussion will be this afternoon, is the strengthening of reserve funds, and we'll see a major proposal come out of the task force on revenue restructuring. We know that the legislature created the Rainy Day Fund in 2007. The main component of that fund is a one-time suspension of what would have been a corporate income tax kicker credit of $319 million. That is in the fund now. But as we look ahead, there's a commitment to 1%, up to 1% of the budget, if it's in the ending balance, to be transferred at the end of the biennium. But right now, of course, projected ending balance is negative. So we're in a situation where the task force looked at what are some alternatives for making sure that that fund is filled during expansionary periods so that it's robust and the legislature has enough dollars during economic downturns, particularly as we seem to be entering a period where downturns are becoming more severe and more frequent. As I mentioned, tax administration and compliance, the Senate has a number of bills they'll be looking in that area. They also have some elements of the tax expenditure policy. They're looking at establishing a way to review tax expenditures in the interim, where you have an interim process to go through them and provide some guidance to Department of Revenue in developing the tax expenditure report. They have some further proposals on low-income tax relief and economic stimulus, again, remembering our limitations as for the budget balance requirement. And then finally, the committee last session and throughout the interim for the interim committee and for the task force, a lot of discussion around local government revenue diversification, particularly with the phase-out of federal forest payments. What kinds of things can local governments do to sustain their services? So we have some proposals that have been introduced in the Senate by the Association of Oregon Counties. If those come over here, those will likely come to this committee.
Shall we stop there and ask for discussion a little bit? I should add one thing that's really not on here. With the when we hear the revenue restructure report, we'll get some issues that the revenue restructure task force recommended to us more or less unanimously, and a couple of those we've already talked about a little bit. But in addition to that, I anticipate that this committee is going to have to look at ways of raising revenue in order to deal with the budget shortfall that we're facing. The last report that we had indicated a budget shortfall in the 09-11 budget of $1.4 billion. I think it's very safe to say it's going to be more than that. And we'll hear tomorrow a little bit of a sort of an introduction to that idea from the state economist. I don't expect to hear specific numbers tomorrow, but I do expect him to talk a little bit about the issues that he's watching and the concerns he has. So I expect that this committee is going to, in addition to what we've got on here, actually look at some changes in revenue, which I'm hoping will include processes that will have long-term consequences for tax fairness, as well as raising some revenue during 09-11, and then perhaps potentially some other measures that would be temporary in nature to help us deal with the fiscal emergency, similar to the without prejudging it at all, similar to the approach that was used in the early 80s. When there were some temporary measures adopted in order to deal with the revenue shortfalls that occurred at that time, and of course the legislature attempted to do some similar things in early in this decade to deal with the recession we had then. Hopefully, if we do something like that, we will do it in a way that is more successful. But I'd like to, if you want to talk about them, these plans this morning, I'd like to it'd be great to have a bit of a committee discussion. These are draft plans. We will be reviewing them and looking at them some more as we go along. For the next several sessions, at least, much of what we're doing is informative in nature to bring the committee up to speed on a number of the issues we'll be dealing with. No comments, no discussion. Yes, Representative Benz.
Chair Barnhart, thank you, Mr. Warner, for the presentation. Excellent job. The most important thing that I see, of course, is on the first page, and the remark is, and have the least disruptive impact on the state economy. And I am just curious, Mr. Warner, how that element of each of these proposals is going to be brought before us so that we understand in this time of economic uncertainty how these ideas are going to affect the very engine that generates these revenues, and how is that going to be brought up to us as we go through this process?
Representative Benz, we have a series of tools that will allow us to look at kind of what some of the economic implications would be in terms of what sectors may be affected, in terms of how it may affect the distribution of income and therefore might influence spending patterns and those kinds of things. And we do have a long-term economic model that will allow us to look at what the feedbacks might be of a revenue proposal. So what we find is that while taxes in general are negative without expenditure increases, certain taxes have different effects versus others. So we'll be able to give you some sense, not a real precise reading, but some sense of which of those tax changes might the economy be most sensitive to in terms of its long-term growth.
Yes, please.
Is it correct to say that this will be a normal element, this aspect of our debate, of each presentation, that there will be a focus upon the impact that whatever our revenue idea might be is going to have upon the folks that are being asked to pay? Is that a normal part of this discussion?
Yes. Representative Benz, we have a number of tools. If it's an income tax proposal, for example, we have a sample of 50,000 taxpayers. So we're able to run that through our simulation model, look at who's affected, how much, how will that influence the taxpayers in different income groups. So you get that initial shot. For long-term proposals, we're able to run through our economic model, which is our OTIM model, Oregon Tax Incidence Model, and show how that may influence the state's long-run equilibrium or its long-run competitive position. The OTIM model is not a very precise tool. It's kind of a big-picture tool. So it's really more useful in terms of major proposals. For example, we used it extensively in the Revenue Restructuring Task Force because we had a lot of major proposals that they wanted to look at. So when it gets down to issues such as, gee, if we have this particular incentive, like, like the Strategic Investment Program, where we're providing some property tax relief, we're not as good at estimating those impacts because those are individual decisions of individual companies. So we're not going to pretend that we can determine that, but we will, in terms of major changes, we have an economic model that will tell us, you know, how that might affect the overall economy. We do also, I might add, Mr. Chair, have on our agenda, at your direction, in Senate Bill 151 last session, we are anticipating some analysis and study of enterprise zones, which might provide the committee with some insights on what we think, or what the evidence tells us, what impact enterprise zones have had. And I know Representative Reed's committee will probably have some issues.
But those are retrospective analyses, aren't they?
Yes, those are
based on what's actually happened.
Right.
And what you've just been talking about is an evaluation of what the effect of a tax plan is likely to have.
Yes, a statewide tax plan.
Right.
Yes,
which of course correct. Only works for larger things because we don't have the capacity to evaluate smaller ones.
That's true.
Yeah. Other thoughts? Yes, Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Warner, as you do these analyses of the retrospective of these tax policies, are you looking exclusively at the implementation of those policies in Oregon? Are you looking at other places? What's the scope of that analysis?
Representative Bailey, I guess the short answer is it depends. We'll try to give you, if there's a particular proposal, we'll try to give you as much information as we have from other areas. In terms of the specific analysis of the enterprise zones in Senate Bill 151, what we've done is break out a sample from different parts of the state where we have rural areas, rural, remote, urban areas, and so forth, and looked at it that way. With that particular analysis doesn't go beyond the state. But we do track and look at the literature and what it tells us. Work has been done in other states, what kind of analysis we can find, and we'll bring that into our analysis of revenue impacts whenever we have that information.
So it's a technique issue, yes, rather than a specific facts issue.
Right. Yes, and obviously some of that becomes really the background component. As you begin to look at an issue, we'll try to bring as much background as we have, and that obviously would be a relevant piece is what we know from other states.
All right. Other things on the plan today? Please don't hesitate if you have other ideas or thoughts on the plan to bring them to Paul's attention or to the vice chair's or my attention, so that we can try to incorporate some of those ideas in the plan as we go ahead. The sessions are, we have a lot to do. Session is fairly short, but I'd like to make sure we hit all of the major issues that members of the committee are interested in pursuing. We'll have plenty to do.
Mr. Chair, if I could just finish with the timeline there, just
yes,
to
please
remind people. And of course, the assembly has gotten much more precise, and you're going to be looking at a resolution that will look at some precise dates for when things, for deadlines and when the session will end. I put some tentative dates in here based on drafts, one thing that comes up very quickly is the deadline for bill draft requests, and that's February 2nd. Groundhog's Day, I guess, is remember it that way. And that's, that can be a difficult one because, sometimes you get in through discussion issues and start to look at them, and then before you know it, that draft request deadline is passed by the time you start thinking about some issues. So that's one I would highlight, and I know the chair is committed to having a number of committee bills, so we would anticipate some introduction. We have a number of those draft requests in now.
Thank you.
For that deadline.
Yes, Representative Riley.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. You asked our thoughts on what we would like to see in the committee. And one of the things that I've been focusing on for a few years now is the tax expenditure report. And there are many, in my estimation, tax expenditures which need investigation. And I believe that some of them can actually go away because they're not serving their purpose anymore, or the purpose, in my opinion, was wrong to start with. So that's a major issue that I'd like to address.
Thank you. And my recollection is that the Senate is going to have a major push in that area. So you may want to have a conversation with Senator Burdick about whether she's covering the topics that you're interested in. If not, I think it would be very reasonable for us to pursue them here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've already started that conversation with the Senator herself.
Good. Thank you. That's great. Let me also add that if you have bill ideas and bill drafts that you would like to have considered for committee introduction, our policy, the policy of this committee in the past has basically been that bill introduction occurs as a courtesy without any obligation on the part of any member to actually support a bill that they agreed ought to be introduced. So if there are bills that that you'd like to have introduced that way, please approach me or the vice chairs or Dr. Warner. Go ahead with the timeline.
Okay.
Yeah.
One other thing I'd add about those, if you're requesting a bill draft and would like to talk with us, you're certainly welcome to do that, and that can be on a confidential basis. So, you know, just to give you some background, or we can, a lot of times we'll know history about certain issues and how they've been treated in the past, or if there have been proposals in the past and that kind of thing. I would encourage you to use us as a resource for that. February, we have bills that have already been assigned to the committee that we have in our secret drawer that Corinne keeps, and so we expect that drawer to fill up before long. So we'll have hearings throughout February. One of the issues that comes up in terms of process that's difficult about that period is that's the time when council's drafting bills, because that bill draft request is on February 2nd. So their time to devote to amendments becomes limited. So that's something we'll need to be aware of in terms of process. March 2nd will be the deadline, tentative deadline for introducing bills. So the committee will have to make sure that whatever bills introduces a committee are done. We do have, as we go through to the deadline for completing work on bills in their chamber of origin, the process exempts House revenue from that particular deadline. However, I think the chair and I have talked a good deal about this, that in order for the committee to get its business done, there really has to be a push to try to meet that deadline, particularly for bills that have originated in the revenue committee. Now, the exceptions come in when you get these subsequent referrals come through, some of which you get at or near the deadline, and the only way the committee can really review those and make some decisions on them is to go past the deadline.
Sure, and of course that's why revenue rules and ways and means are exempted from that particular deadline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And of course for this committee, the first deadline is of particular importance, because any bills that are raising revenue have to originate in this committee and not on the Senate side. So that naturally what that means is you've got a lot more bills initially than the Senate has. So your time crunch tends to come in that first phase. May 15 is always kind of a landmark date around here. It's when the release of the final revenue forecast occurs. That is, I will also remind you, and I know those of you who thought about this realize this, that, you know, May 15th is a month after April 15th. And so that's where you tend to see swing. So in an income tax-dominated system, and, of course, we know that over 90% of our general fund is income taxes, that deadline, that May 15, is subject to swings because that's when you get those final, the information on those returns. And that it won't be until that day that we really have confirmation on 2008 tax year. And what happens is during strong periods, we tend to get a lot more final payments we expect and a lot less refunds. And so the swing kind of reinforces itself. During down periods, refunds are way over and our final payments are way under. So we'll be watching that day carefully. In terms of the actual numbers that you'll be working with for the budget balance, for the general fund budget balance, the close of session numbers, we call it, or the base for the 2% kicker surplus calculation, it's that May 15 forecast plus legislative changes. So the way we've divided up responsibilities with executive branch is they do all the estimates under current law and the revenue forecast, and then they take all the estimates we have done on the decisions you've made through our revenue impacts, and we sum those up, add that to the May 15 forecast. That becomes the close of session estimate, and that's what the budget has to be balanced to. So that's kind of the process. And, of course, there could be, and we've had certainly sessions where this has been the case, where the Revenue Committee has been working late into session because of its impact on the overall budget balance. So that could very well occur this time as well. We do have a June 8th deadline to try to get all committee work done, and that's just to, you know, given process and paper and first reading, second reading, so forth, is to ensure that the session would be done by the 30th. So it'll be a pretty tight timeline to meet.
Thank you. Other comments now? Let me simply add that when we tried this plan in the last session, many of us who've been here for a while started realizing in February that we were in end-of-session mode, that we had a lot to do and deadlines to meet, and things move very quickly. So if you have ideas for bills for this committee, I would strongly encourage you to get them ready and prepared and in as quickly as you possibly can, because our opportunity to actually consider bills, even though we meet every day, it will be very, very limited. And then, of course, the revenue emergency being what it is, we may find some of our plans upset because of the need to deal with the overall budget situation. Anything else for this morning?
Just if I could,
yes, please.
Mr. Chair, just kind of alert you to the public finance document, and I hope you'll find this useful. And it's, you know, one of the things that I've found is that, and this goes back to my time at in the old executive department, what became DAS, you know, on the budget side, there's not a lot of history that is kept or maintained. And this is one of the sources we think does provide you with some history on a lot of issues. And if you look through it, you'll find there's, for example, we have the state school fund going back into the 40s, and what's been the division between the state and local revenue for schools, what's been the property tax, income tax patterns going back several decades. So you can at least see how things have changed over the years, and it gives you a little bit more context. What we try to include in the report is an overview with a census data, a review of some of the major kind of general fund issues like the kicker, history of the kicker since its passage in 79 as a statute, state budget history going back the last five biennia, and we have a chart set up there that gives you the general fund, other fund expenditures and revenue, and then I plugged in some kind of broad measures like the CPI, population income. So, you know, you can do some comparisons, and anything like that you want us to help you with, we're happy to do. We also have a table, B4 and 5, that we think is useful. It's just the second section there, B4 and B5. We get questions, of course, a lot of questions on tax changes. And, you know, what happens if I did this? And what happens if I increase the income tax credit to 12% of the federal income income tax credit, 6% now. And then we show those estimated impacts for you. So you've got kind of a menu of tax reductions, and the next page is tax increases. So usually most bills have some nuances that affect the revenue, but this is a kind of a starting place for you if you want to look through, and what are the options that have been discussed before, what are the revenue impact of some of those options. One we often get asked, for example, is eliminate the tax on unemployment income. Of course, unfortunately, that becomes one of our few growing components in recessions. You can see the impact of that would be about $28 million a year. So those kinds of things, capital gains reductions, we hear that a lot. We have some estimates there from our latest model runs. So it kind of gives you something to work with if you're kind of thinking or throwing things around with your colleagues. Then you have some numbers there to start from. And then as you get more specific, of course, we'll help you kind of work through those. The rest of the document goes through the major programs, the personal income tax, corporate income tax, property taxes. We have a long history of property tax relief, although it's been a bit of a back burner issue since the initiatives passed. Estate tax has become a huge issue for us, almost $200 million now in general fund revenue per biennium. We're looking for some federal changes there, too. We have some federal summary for you. School finance, the school finance data distribution over time, transportation and timber. Timber's a little bit more of a back burner issue, but I know there's still a lot of interest in that. And then the excise taxes, comparison with other states on cigarettes and alcohol and so forth. And then we have a little history of tax votes that actually goes back to, I think, the first one we've got on there in Tom, Governor McCall's plan in 73 and the vote on that. So we often get asked, how many times has this been voted on before? And if it was, how did it be? So that's for your resource and background, and can also be very effective for insomnia.
Yes. Thank you. It looks like we have our reading for the next several late evenings before us. Anything else for this morning? We have an exciting meeting scheduled for tomorrow morning. See you all bright and early, 8 o'clock. We'll go then. And with that, the House Committee on Revenue is adjourned.
Did we exhaust our agenda, Mr. Chair?
We did exhaust our agenda.
Is that good? I'm so glad.
Yes.
When the blue light is on, we're still on the
Oh, is that what the blue light is?
Yeah. Yeah. You will. Oh.